Facebook.com/VOA1 The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Dan Novak, Gregory Stockel, and Brian Lynn. Later, Kelly Jean Kelly will present America's Presidents. But first, here is Dan Novak.
In the northern Ethiopian region of Tigray, more than 350,000 people are facing starvation. It is not just that people are starving, it is that many are being starved. Farmers, aid workers, and local officials confirmed to the Associated Press that food has become a weapon of war. The AP found Ethiopian and Eritrean soldiers in the war-torn area blocking food aid and even stealing it. Reporters saw Ethiopian military officials turn away food and medical aid as fighting continued in the town of Hauzen. The soldiers are also accused of preventing farmers from harvesting and stealing seeds for planting. Tigray people say soldiers have killed farm animals and stolen equipment. More than 2 million of Tigray's 6 million people have already fled, unable to harvest their crops. Those who stayed often cannot plant new crops because they fear for their lives. The war in Tigray started in early November, shortly before the harvest season. On one side of the war are troops loyal to the expelled leaders of Tigray. On the other are Ethiopian government troops and allied troops from neighboring Eritrea. Militias from Ethiopia's Amhara ethnic group, who see themselves as rivals to the Tigrayan militias, are also involved. Trapped in the middle are civilians. The war has produced mass killings, gang rapes, and the widespread expulsion of civilians from their homes. The United States has declared the events in western Tigray an ethnic cleansing. Ethiopia's government strongly disputes that starvation is being used as a weapon. Mitsuku Kasa is an official with the National Disaster Risk Management Commission. He claimed Wednesday that we don't have any food shortage. But that is not what the AP found in Tigray. Tekle Mariam Gebremichael said he and his neighbors were no longer allowed to farm. He said Eritrean soldiers came to him while he was looking after his cows and harvesting crops. They shot both him and his cows. He survived, but the animals did not. With food in limited supply, his wound is healing slowly. The world has to take immediate action to help Tigray, because we can't live on our own land anymore, he said. Witnesses say soldiers have taken other measures to destroy food. An aid group official said Eritrean soldiers mix grain with sand and soil, making it impossible to eat. Farmers said soldiers have also taken their farming equipment. All our farm tools, including plows, were looted and taken away on trucks, said Berhanu Sagai, a 24-year-old farmer. They left nothing there. Sometimes food aid is still delivered, but there is never enough. Early in May, a large crowd came to Agula to receive 15 kilograms of wheat, half a kilogram of peas, and some cooking oil, per person. It was supposed to last a month. The food was only for the most vulnerable. 60-year-old Letebrehan Belai walked for 4 hours to get there. She said she has a family of 10, but received food for just 5. She still said she was doing better than others. There will be people dying of hunger, she said. I'm Dan Novak.
A research center in Louisiana is examining COVID-19 through the use of monkeys. By studying the monkeys and their tissues, researchers hope to learn more about the disease. There are 5,000 monkeys at the Tulane National Research Center. The research center is near a small Louisiana town north of New Orleans. Most of the primates are a sort of monkey called rhesus macaques. They are designated for use in scientific research, including experiments for COVID-19. The research center has high-level biosafety laboratories that are able to control biological threat agents like anthrax, an infectious bacterium. It was well-positioned to quickly change to COVID-19 research when the coronavirus pandemic hit. Skip Baum is a director and chief animal medical officer at the Tulane Center. Baum said the primates' DNA and physiological makeup makes them ideal models for human comparison when studying diseases. Baum told Reuters, non-human primates are really important to understand the disease and how it affects an organism. They are also important for comparing outcomes like treatments or vaccinations. Rhesus macaques are the primate most commonly used for scientific research. They make up the majority of the center's colony. They also make up the majority of the 200 adult animals used in its coronavirus experiments over the past year. The National Academy of Sciences Scientific Journal published one study by the center in February. The study found older, overweight humans with a more severe COVID-19 infection breathed out more liquid droplets. Due to this, they spread the disease more than others. Chad Roy is one of the writers on the study. He is also the center's director of infectious disease aerobiology. Aerobiology is the study of pollutants or viruses that travel in the air. He said primates were at the center of this study. In the future, the center plans to study what is called long COVID. This happens when a patient remains unwell long after first becoming infected. This affects about 10% of patients. The center's director, Jay Report, said there are many different therapeutics that are coming online that need to be tested. And with the network that we have, we can compare one treatment to another. He was describing the center's role in organizing the work of 7 United States primate research centers on COVID-19 research. Once experiments end, the Tulane Center will humanely kill the monkeys for tissue collection. This permits researchers to study COVID-19's effects on the whole body. Kathy Guillermo, works with the Laboratory Investigations at the People for Ethical Treatment of Animals, also known as PETA. PETA is a nonprofit organization that fights to protect animal rights. Guillermo said primates should not be used for testing. They wouldn't have to kill them if they didn't use them, she said. What we're going to learn of value is going to be what we learn from human beings, she added. I'm Gregory Stockel.
A company in Finland has developed a satellite made of wood that it plans to launch into orbit this year. The small experimental satellite aims to test the effectiveness of wooden materials used in the extreme conditions of space. The project is a cooperative effort between several Finnish businesses, including an engineering company, a maker of research satellites, and a major wood producer. The European Space Agency is supporting the mission by assisting with pre-flight testing and providing sensors to be placed inside the satellite. The wooden satellite is considered a CubeSat. A CubeSat is a small satellite mainly used for research purposes by universities and nonprofit organizations. The one developed in Finland, called WISA WoodSat, is a cube measuring 10 centimeters on all sides. The main structure of the satellite is completely made of wood. It was built by Arctic Astronautics, a company that also produces and sells CubeSats for educational purposes. Jari McKinnon is the co-founder of Arctic Astronautics and is leading the WoodSat mission. He told Reuters the goal of the project is to expose the satellite's plywood material to the extremes of heat, cold, pressure, and radiation. Since it will be the first wooden satellite launched into orbit, McKinnon said it will be the first test of how such materials might be used to develop future space structures. For example, wood could be used to build parts of spacecraft or space stations. We are starting to study the behavior of wood in space, he said. Finland's UPM Plywood supplied the wood, created from birch trees, for the project. The company says it treated the wood with heat in a vacuum to dry it out and add strength. A compound containing aluminum and oxygen was also put on the wood to protect it against highly reactive oxygen found in space. UPM says it has already carried out many tests with the wood and found it to perform very well in harsh environments. The company said WoodSat is made of a sustainable plywood that could be used to replace fossil fuel materials heavily used in the space industry. Mission planners have carried out several test flights and say they plan to launch Woodsat aboard a Rocket Lab-built Electron rocket from New Zealand in the autumn. The most recent test flight was carried out last Saturday in Finland. A balloon carried Woodsat to an altitude of 31 kilometers in a part of Earth's upper atmosphere known as the stratosphere. The flight lasted about 3 hours, and all the systems performed as planned, McKinnon said in a statement. When it deploys for its full mission, Woodsat is expected to orbit at an altitude of about 500 to 600 kilometers, the European Space Agency said. McKinnon says Woodsat was also built with two cameras, one of which the satellite can extend on a selfie stick. The reason for this camera is to permit the mission team to watch what is happening to the satellite at all times. We want to have photos of the surface in space, McKinnon told Reuters. How does it develop day by day? Is the color changing? We want to see what is happening. The selfie camera may be able to capture evidence of cracks or other damage. McKinnon says he does not believe there will be a huge demand for wooden satellites anytime soon. However, he does think there will be a niche for wood-based materials to be used in space. I'm Brian Lynn.
To help protect yourself against the new coronavirus, wash your hands for 20 seconds with soap and water before you eat, after using the toilet, and after touching anything many other people touch, like a seat on a public bus. If you cannot wash your hands with soap and water, use an alcohol-based hand sanitizer that contains at least 60% alcohol. Taking these steps can help prevent not only the new coronavirus disease, but also colds, flu, and other viruses. For more information, visit the following websites: the World Health Organization at www.who.int or the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention at www.cdc.gov.
VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. Today we are talking about Abraham Lincoln. He was the 16th President of the United States. Many Americans consider him one of the country's greatest leaders. Yet people alive when Lincoln was elected in 1860 would probably be surprised by modern-day opinions about him. He had little formal education or government experience. During the presidential campaign, critics made fun of his appearance and his simple way of talking. They warned that he was not very intelligent and would harm the nation's image. Some of his opponents, especially in southern states, had even bigger concerns. They were afraid Lincoln would use the power of the federal government to end slavery in their states. They were right. Abraham Lincoln was born in the frontier state of Kentucky. His family was very poor and had a simple home, a log cabin. Lincoln had to support his parents and his sister by working, so he rarely went to school. Instead, he taught himself by reading books. Eventually, he became a lawyer in the state of Illinois. As a young man, Lincoln was known for several qualities. He was tall and thin. He was very strong. His neighbors remembered him cutting down trees. And he was honest. The people he defended in court called him Honest Abe. In time, Lincoln was elected to the Illinois General Assembly, the state's legislature. He also served one term as a congressman in the U.S. House of Representatives. But he was not popular there. Voters did not like his opposition to the country's war with Mexico. So Lincoln withdrew from politics and turned his attention to his family. He had married a Southern belle named Mary Todd in 1842. They had four sons, but two died when they were very young. Lincoln also developed his legal career representing railroad companies. Some people thought he might become the best railroad lawyer in the country. But that is not what happened. In the 1850s, Lincoln returned to national politics. The division over the issue of slavery was deepening. Lincoln was not an anti-slavery activist, an abolitionist. But he did not support the country's policies on slavery. Lincoln believed slavery violated the American Declaration of Independence, which said all men had the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. To be clear, Lincoln did not believe that black people should have the same rights as white U.S. citizens. But he did not agree that one person should own other people or profit from their work while they earned nothing and were held captive. Lincoln decided to compete in elections for a seat in the U.S. Senate. He was chosen as the candidate of a new anti-slavery party. Members called themselves Republicans. During the election campaign, Lincoln famously discussed the issue of slavery in a series of debates with Stephen Douglas, the Democratic Party's candidate. Lincoln's words moved some voters, but they did not earn him enough votes to get elected. So, while Douglas took the seat in the Senate, Lincoln prepared to run for president. Lincoln said that, if he were elected, he would not expand slavery to new territories in the country's West. But he promised not to interfere with slavery in the southern states, where it already existed. Voters in southern slaveholding states did not trust Lincoln. Not a single southern state supported him in the election of 1860. But he won anyway. The support of anti-slavery Northerners gave him the presidency. In answer, seven Southern states withdrew from the Union. Four more later joined them. These states formed a new government called the Confederate States of America, or the Confederacy. Confederate officials chose their own president and wrote their own constitution, which permitted each state control over its own laws, especially laws that protected slavery. Confederate officials said they no longer recognized the power of the U.S. federal government or its chief executive. As that chief executive, Lincoln would have to decide what to do. President Lincoln's first test came a little more than a month after he was sworn in. The event involved Fort Sumter, a federal military base on an island off the coast of South Carolina. Soldiers on the base needed food. Lincoln said he would send some by ship. But Confederate officials considered the port part of South Carolina, which belonged to the Confederacy. They demanded that the Union soldiers leave the fort. But Union forces and the U.S. president ignored the Confederates' demands. As promised, Lincoln sent the supply ships. As expected, Confederate soldiers attacked. A day and a half later, the fort's Union soldiers surrendered. The clash did not last long, and no one was killed in the fighting. But the battle at Fort Sumter marked the official beginning of hostilities between the Union and the Confederacy. Lincoln immediately took action to answer the loss at Fort Sumter. He called on state militias for troops and asked for a special meeting of Congress. The president was careful not to ask Congress to make an official declaration of war, in part because he did not want to recognize the Confederacy as a separate nation. Instead, he called the southern states' opposition a rebellion. However, the conflict between the Southern Confederacy and the Northern Union was a civil war. Neither side expected the fighting to last very long, a few weeks or maybe months. Instead, the Civil War lasted 4.5 years. Most of the major battles took place near Washington, D.C., in the states of Maryland, Virginia, and Pennsylvania. Soldiers and civilians also clashed in the West, in Tennessee, as well as in the southern states of Mississippi, South Carolina, and Georgia. But the war involved the entire country. At least 4 million men fought in it. Among the soldiers were African American and Native American men. The conflict divided families. Brothers, fathers, and sons fought against each other. Women in both the North and South also supported the war effort. They cooked meals, made and repaired clothing for the troops, served as nurses, and cared for the soldiers. Both white and African American women also took over the work of men who had left to fight. And more than 620,000 men died. Recent scholarship says as many as 750,000. The Civil War remains the bloodiest war in American history. And it changed the country. The war radically affected American politics, economics, and society. Abraham Lincoln was the U.S. president through all of it. Next week, we will talk more about Lincoln's presidency and his legacy. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.